You know, I only ask because there has to be some form of comedy on the show. You know, baking. How funny is baking, right?
Well, there's, yeah.
I understand. This great joke about comedy. This guy asked a question. Ask me, what is the most important thing about comedy?
What's the most
timing.
Important
thing? You get it? You get it? Hey, welcome back to My Life as a Foodie. My name is Phil. I'm your host. We got a great show for you today. We're talking with Debbie Rose from the Stonehenge Baking Company. She'll be coming in the studio in a bit. Going to talk about the difference between eggs produced in Europe and here in the United States. Kind of the real question is whether or not you need to refrigerate your eggs. Also going to talk about banh mi, going to the fast food side of things, Yum Brands. Is experimenting with opening a banh mi shop, and I'm going to tell you why I think that's a shitty idea. And we're going to do a little baking segment, except I'm not going to do the baking segment. For once, we're going to have a professional do it for us, Christina Tosi from The Mind of a Chef. Got a little segment to share with you there, which I think is kind of cool. You know, we don't talk about baking on the show. We don't bake much, you know. Although I do bake a lot more than I used to. But now I, you know, it was just kind of interesting. I met Debbie through Michelle. And she was it's impressive what she does and how she does it. And you'll learn more about her in a bit. This whole egg situation, though, it's an interesting article. I read it in Business Insider a couple weeks ago. Now, if you go to Europe, they don't refrigerate their eggs. You find them in, like, you know, the dry foods aisle. And here, you always find them in the refrigerator. And you wonder why. And I've always been told, you know, you don't have to have eggs in the refrigerator. And you go to some people's houses and they'll have eggs hanging in baskets in the kitchen. And I think, why aren't they refrigerated? Aren't those going to hatch? If they get too warm, they'll incubate and hatch little baby chickens. Because I'm stupid and that's how I think. Well, as it turns out, the USDA requires eggs here to be sold on supermarket shelves, which are called graded eggs. They require them to be washed and sprayed with a sanitizer solution to reduce the risk of salmonella. As it turns out, salmonella, you know, very bad thing. The show, while it was in hiatus, a very, very big story broke about Foster Farms. You remember we had Foster Farms on the show years ago, and they had two outbreaks of salmonella within a six-month span and didn't do a fucking thing about it, which is great. Thank you, Foster Farms. I'm glad I came to bat for you. Really, I just felt, you know, I should have known better. This is just bad. This happens. You know, it happens, and it needs to be handled, like, right away. But the question remains, why do we refrigerate our eggs and they don't? As it turns out, there are two ways that salmonella can infect eggs. It can be passed on from an infected hen, you know, once she lays it, and there's nothing you can do about that, or it gets on the outside of the shell after it's laid because, you know, chickens, as it turns out, hens, bit lazy, you know, they'll go ahead and lay an egg and then think, I got to take a dump. Don't really feel like getting up. Yeah, kind of like that. So in the U.S., we've got these big, big laying houses. And they prefer those over the free-range system because, you know, you can produce more eggs, smaller amount of land. And even with the best sanitary practices, the factory farm environment, you know, just kind of makes it contamination a bit more conducive. And the eggs are moved directly from the house to a conveyor belt, goes through a washer, they spray them down, and then they are refrigerated. Now, the thing is that they say it needs to be washed the right way, or it can increase the chances of bacteria seeping into the shell because there's feces on the outside of it. If you wet a dirty shell that provides moisture, you know, bacteria can breed and then penetrate the shell because the shell is kind of porous. Now, in Europe, they take a different approach. They say the priority in egg production is to produce clean eggs right then and there. From the point of collection, you've got a clean egg. Rather than trying to clean them afterwards, there's this suggestion that, you know, not cleaning eggs in the UK or in Europe helps, you know, maintain good farm husbandry and the practices that they have there. And it tends to work. They found that washing this washing process that we do damages the outside layer of an egg sometime. So without this chemical barrier, it becomes easy for the bacteria to get inside a clean egg. And, you know, once eggs are washed, they have to be moved to a cooler room that maintains a temperature of 45 degrees. If they're dirty, they can be stored in temperatures of up to 60 degrees. But after it's refrigerated, it has to be at this temperature. And I'll tell you why. If you've got a cold egg that you leave outside the refrigerator for, you know, longer than, say, an hour or 2 hours, take a look at it. Condensation builds up on top of that, right? When you do that, that sweat facilitates the growth of bacteria that can then damage your egg. Now, I don't know about you, and maybe I'm a little weird, but when I get an egg from, say, the farmer's market, and you notice these eggs sold at farmer's markets are just kind of out there. They don't have them refrigerated, right? Their hens lay them. They, you know, if there's poop on them, they clean it. They probably don't spray it down, but they clean it off. And you get, you know, these fresh eggs. I always take them and put them back in the fridge. I don't know why I do that. It's just a thing. I never leave them out. You know, I just don't know if it's safe to keep these things. If the temperature gets too high, what's going to happen? But when I do get an egg, whether I buy it at the farmer's market or Whole Foods or any store, I get an egg. It's got a tiny bit of chicken shit on it. I kind of feel like I've got something organic. This is real. This wasn't manufactured by somebody. A hen laid this and then took a dump on it. And I feel, you know, it's just part of, you know, farm life. There's a little chicken shit to go along with your egg. And do I use the egg? Hell yes. Do I clean it first? Absolutely. Because I'm not making a chicken shit omelet. You know, it's nice and all. It's quaint to have a little bird poop on it. But I'm still going to eat this goddamn thing, and I want to make sure it's going to be okay. So that's the kind of the story here. The thing is this, vaccination has been linked to a rapid decline of salmonella cases in the United Kingdom. In the States here, we don't mandate immunizations of these chickens, although many egg producers vaccinate their hens. In 2010, the FDA said that they wouldn't legally require the vaccination of hens because there's not enough evidence to conclude that vaccinating hens against salmonella would prevent people from getting sick. Don't you find this a little funny? With as many people, 140,000 people a year get sick each year from eating eggs contaminated with the bacteria. Wouldn't you think they'd mandate this? Let's say, listen, you got to vaccinate these hens. I think they don't do it because maybe that's going to raise the cost of these eggs. Would you not want to pay a little bit extra for the eggs just to ensure you're not going to get salmonella? It's a good question. So early last month, I came across this story. I posted it in the Facebook group. I said, you know, this is a horrible idea. Bogner immediately comes back and says, why on earth would you have a problem with this? He knows why I would have a problem with this, and I didn't qualify it with a response. Instead, everyone else did, and they're all right. Here's the thing. This company, Yum Brands, is the company that owns Taco Bell, Kentucky Fried Chicken, and Pizza Hut. They're launching, experimentally, a banh mi sandwich shop in Texas near the SMU campus. Now, I'm not sure. Maybe they just announced the idea that they were going to do this to see what kind of response they would get, or maybe they're serious about it. There are two things about this that bother me. And listen, I'm not going to get in the way of anyone doing business. It's fine. Yum Brands, I think, not my cup of tea, but whatever. Ask a Mexican what they think of Taco Bell, okay? Do that. If history's taught us anything about Yum Brands, what they do to certain foods is a crime against food. Now, granted, Kentucky Fried Chicken, for fried chicken, it's pretty damn good. But Pizza Hut, ridiculous. Taco Bell, ridiculous. I can only imagine what they're going to do with a banh mi sandwich. And the problem will be that they will go to places where there are not banh mi sandwich shops. Bumfuck Idaho, whatever. And people will taste these sandwiches. God knows what it's going to be like. Maybe a tuna fish sandwich with some cilantro in it or something. And they're going to think that's what banh mi tastes like. And the next time someone offers them a banh mi sandwich that actually is a banh mi sandwich, they're going to say, this is not a banh mi sandwich. This is a banh mi sandwich. And they go to this other place. That's the problem, number one, because it has taken the authenticity of banh mi and basically raped it. The second thing is that if this gets popular and if they do it the right way and make it so cheap and they completely water it down, before you know it, they're going to be putting out of business all these mom and pop shops, these places from Vietnam that actually produced really good banh mi sandwiches, and dropping them right out. That's the problem, really, is that, you know, they compete against authentic shops and mom and pop shops that barely make a profit anyway and knock them out. And that's another issue I have. But ultimately, making an inferior version of something, it's like, you know, having chicken soup, calling it pho, you know, that's not the right thing. It's just, it's like, you know, this that great line at the end of Goodfellas when he went to witness protection. He's in Kansas somewhere and they're serving him. He orders spaghetti meatballs and he gets noodles with ketchup on them. That's kind of what I'm talking about. And so I'm sorry if I offended anybody by, you know, racking on him, but I just think it's kind of silly. You know, Italians, you mention Pizza Hut to Italians and they'll roll their eyes. You mention this banh mi shop to, you know, someone from Vietnam and they're definitely going to roll their eyes, but they're going to do it in a nice way.
Grocery shopping can be about getting in, getting what you need, and getting out. But are shoppers buying what they think they're buying?
If they're only reading the front of the package, many times they're not. Manufacturers are really good at picking up on those buzzwords that consumers are concerned with, and they use those to catch our attention.
A few common misconceptions. First, bread labeling can be tricky, says registered dietitian, nutritionist Anne Dunaway Tay.
Although it might say wheat or multigrain, it doesn't mean it's a whole grain bread.
You want to look for it to say 100%. Also, the term light can be confusing. It can be spelled two different ways but mean the same thing. Light can mean less calories, fat, or sodium than a food's original counterpart. But
just because a label says light does not mean that it's licensed to eat more of that food.
And trans fats. Many manufacturers have removed these bad fats from foods, but not all of them have done so. Just because a food says zero,
by law, it can contain up to 0.5 gram of trans fat and still claim zero on the label per serving.
You want to look in the ingredients for the words partially hydrogenated oil, the major source of trans fats, and steer clear of those items.
Okay, so we're joined today by our special guest, Debbie Rose of the Stonehenge Baking Company. Hello, Debbie.
Hello.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Get the important stuff out of the way. When did you get started with this?
Well, I got started baking about probably 25 years ago. I'm self-taught. I've never went to culinary school. I took advantage of relationships that I had. I had family that asked for special things, for special occasions. I had played around with a lot of things in the kitchen for a long time. So I taught myself the kind of flavors that I liked. I really got started by reading recipes, and soon I found out that I had the ability to taste a recipe.
You had a palate.
I had a palate. So when I was reading a recipe, I could actually taste it. So I knew when something was going to work out or if I needed to tweak it a little bit, I could tell.
That's great.
And it's a very unusual kind of a talent, but it's a great one for the current life that I have.
Right.
So I actually got started while I was working elsewhere. And actually kind of came into it because people were pushing me into it. It was one
at,
of those,
at gunpoint or something? Or,
yeah, right.
You do this, damn it, or else.
It was almost at some point sort of like that. Like, you know, we would have a special occasion, you know, that we'd make food for, and people would say, "Oh, right, we're going to get you to make those desserts, right?" So, you know, it just kind of went from there. And honestly, it's I was sort of pushed into it. People would talk me into it all the time. I'd say, no, somebody else can right. do it, and give them a chance. And other people didn't want to because they liked my desserts.
How long has Stonehenge? How long have you owned this company?
About a year.
And this was previously owned by somebody else.
It was previously owned. It was owned by a couple that started it, founded it about 12 years ago.
Okay.
And it was started because they needed a new vocation, I guess. But the woman had it was a husband and wife team, mm-hmm. and the initial recipe came from her grandmother. And she tweaked it from there. So over a period of time, they came up with other variations on the basic scone recipe.
So they started with scones.
They started with scones.
Now, had they branched out to other things, or had it always just been scones?
That's the primary, that's their flagship.
Okay.
Was their flagship product. They did go into brownies and bars and lemon bars and cookies. And now that we have, you know, the world has changed and people have different needs, like gluten-free
right.
kind of items and, you know, the vegan. We've started branching out into some of those areas as well.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing is really funny because people are going to think to themselves, why is he having somebody who bakes on a show? Because I have primarily not been a baking type of person.
Right, okay.
And so people should know that I tasted one of your scones. Michelle brought it home one day, and it was a glazed scone. And it was my history with scones, and I've told you this, is
yes.
that they were really dry.
Right.
And I don't like dry things in my mouth.
Right.
Tannic wines, IPAs right. that are overly
right.
too hop, not enough malt. Those things I just tend to stay away from.
Right.
Scones have always been one of them.
Yes.
This scone that you brought was glazed like an old-fashioned donut.
Yes.
And not only the fact that it was glazed, but the scone itself was so moist and so rich that
right.
I was instantly hooked on it. And I was intrigued by what you do.
Uh-huh. Thank you.
Was there an aha moment for you in this whole baking thing when you finally, one day that you said, I think I can do this for a living?
Yes.
When was that?
Well, it was probably about 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I had been baking for myself, my family, my friends for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And people kept asking me to repeat the same things over and over. And so I realized that not just one or two people liked my taste. So, and I understand it's very specific. It's it's all natural. There's no preservatives. I never start with mixes. Everything's done by hand. There are some things a value system that I took to my business.
And that's what makes it more unique.
That's what makes it unique.
Yeah, right.
Well, what also makes it unique are the flavors. You're never overwhelmed by sugar, even though there's pure cane sugar in everything that we do. You're not overwhelmed by it. There's no aftertaste. There's nothing. And we certainly don't start with mixes. We do, you know, very fine material, you know, ingredients.
Right.
But I think that what is very different for us is the way that it tastes. You taste the flavor. It's not overwhelmed by something else. If it's a lemon raspberry scone, you taste the lemon and you taste the raspberries. You don't taste the sugar.
Right.
It's just kind of that. It gives a base to what other things. You know, our product is balanced. And so
there's no star in any recipe. It's
no.
like, you know, it's a raspberry scone, shitloads of raspberries.
Yes.
No, it's a scone with raspberries.
Yes, yeah. That's right. Right. And we do that with everything. But, you know, they're very honest flavors. So and you're going to taste the flavor in what we do. So you don't have too much of anything.
Right.
It's just really balanced.
Is there an inspiration you get from some of these recipes? I mean, you're inspired by something?
Well, I'm always inspired by something. And you know, we try all kinds of different things. We don't currently have a savory version of our scones, and I'm working on that.
Bacon.
Like bacon and cheese,
right?
Which would be a perfect combination.
Right.
But there's, you know, we have to balance all of the flavors, and sometimes that takes a while.
Sure.
But definitely, I get inspired by what other people are doing, what is popular in the world, and other things that I find interesting combinations. Because for us, it's just not a matter of introducing something. It's a matter of doing the right combinations.
Now, you're located in Camarillo.
Correct.
Which is north of Los Angeles.
Right.
Okay. Now, do you source your materials from certain places, or do you go looking for specific materials, or is there anything specific about that?
Well, we do source things locally.
Okay.
Wherever possible.
Nice.
But we have a standards list of sources that we've been working with for a while. But as I expand into new categories, we obviously have new ingredients. I will always make the choice to choose things locally. And that means the greater Los Angeles, Orange County area, you know, Southern California,
right,
if you will, not just Ventura County.
Of course. Has there been one of the bigger challenges for you? What has there been a really big challenge in this business?
Well, you know, our company has been around for 12 years. So we have a really good base of business. We've built a good foundation. But getting it to the next level has been really a challenge for us. Finding the right customers and the right retailers to sell our product. And sometimes the retailers that we do business with change direction on us. So it's not always, you know, a long-term relationship.
Change direction, we're not going to sell food, now we're going to sell pants.
No, we're going to sell really low quality. We want something for 30 cents instead of a dollar.
We've decided to sell Krispy Kreme donuts.
We have decided that we don't care what kind of quality, and we're not going to pay for it.
Okay.
So that's really important to us, is to make sure that we are able to, we have pretty high standards.
Right.
And we think that our customers expect that from us. We have a calling, you know,
sure,
and that's really our thing. We'll never cut corners.
Where can it be found? Where can your products be found now?
Currently, we're in all of the Mother's Markets. We're in Gelson's Markets. We're in a lot of places like UCLA, which you might not expect. Coffee houses, tea houses up in Pasadena.
Oh, this is all Southern California.
All Southern California.
Okay.
We do have some retail or coffee houses in Arizona as well.
Okay. Now, do you ship directly from your website? Can people order from the website?
Yes, of course.
They can. Can you ship across state lines?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. Sure. And we do. We get people who move, and they, you know, they still want their scones from us.
Nice.
We've had people pretty recently order 36 or 48 at a time, so they're never out.
And this stuff stays fresh long enough?
It actually does.
Okay.
What we do on site is we prepackage everything. We package it within about 24 hours of it being baked.
Right.
And they're individually wrapped, which preserves their integrity.
Does it have to be refrigerated?
It does not.
Okay.
No. If you want to extend the life of the product, you can put it in the refrigerator and then take it out. You can even put it in the freezer, which, you know, you can put it in there for three months,
right,
and it's still fresh.
Is there anything that sells more than anything else? What's your most popular item?
Well, our number one is our scones, and the number one within scones is our maple pecan scone.
Nice.
Which is absolutely delicious. The thing that sets us apart with that scone, and people want it over and over and over. I mean, I have so many stories from our customers who come in and they're buying one every morning, you know, somebody who has moved, and they come back and they order 36, so they're never out.
Wow.
We just really have a following.
That's,
you know,
nice.
But the people who taste our product know the difference.
And it's all natural, so it's not like it's a really bad thing for you.
No. Yeah. It's actually, I would sort of tongue-in-cheek say it's quality calories as opposed to, you know, empty calories.
Well, you make a healthy granola, I know that.
Right, we do, and we make a killer granola. It's absolutely delicious.
Nice.
I actually brought some with me today.
Excellent.
For you to keep. But it's, it's all natural. It's made by hand in a small batch, and we turn over the granola and the oats, and it has fresh sliced nuts in it and raisins and all kind. You know, it's mixed together with honey, which is the sweetener.
Right.
So there's absolutely nothing in there that is not natural. Absolutely delicious.
Have you thought about anything along the lines of energy bar or anything for athletes?
Actually, we have, and I've been playing around with taking our granola because we have a lot of people who just really love that granola.
Right.
And so I've tried to make that into a bar form, And cut it. We have some equipment that cuts bars down, and so I'm working on it.
Nice.
I'm trying to find a way to make that into other configurations because it's so delicious.
Right. So your kitchen is in Camarillo.
The commercial kitchen is actually in Camarillo.
And you guys bake every day there?
Yes.
Every day.
Just about every day.
And you ship directly from the kitchen, or is
yes,
it?
Yes, we do.
Nice. Now, is there any plans to open a storefront in the future, or is that one of the things you think about?
Well, it's sort of, we do. I do think about it. I mean, in my wildest dreams, I would fantasize about it.
Let's not talk about fantasies. This is ridiculous.
Oh, why not?
It's a family show.
Food always lends itself to that for some of us.
Indeed, it does.
So, but yes, I would love to, but I'd have to find. I think I'd need a good partner.
Right.
That really was able to focus on that.
You're still talking about the fantasy with
yeah.
this? Okay. So let's talk about A Taste of Camarillo, because that's coming up here. July 27th?
27th.
Okay.
Right.
Now, what is that exactly?
It's actually a charity event for Ventura County. It's, as I understand it, the longest running thing of its kind in Ventura County. But it supports local charities like the Boys and Girls Club.
Nice.
Like some hospice Camarillo Hospice. Also some other organizations, student organizations for scholarships for kids who are in need of some scholarships.
Nice.
It's a huge range of people who benefit from this one event. It's an annual event, and it's been going on for quite a while.
So there are all sorts of eateries and wineries and stuff
right,
there, and you're
right.
part of that.
It's a food and wine festival. It's on the 27th, which is a Sunday afternoon from 1 to 4. They do have a website that you can log on to.
Yeah, I got the brochure you brought with you right here. Yeah. I'm looking for
and
the
there's,
website.
And there's like 100 or 200 wineries and restaurants and people, food conveyors, purveyors, I should say.
Right. Okay, tasteofcamarillo.com. We'll put a link on the website.
Okay, MyLifeIsAFoodie.com.
We'll put a link
and
there.
And I will be there. I'm sharing a booth space with a winery that I will get to know.
Awesome.
When I get there. And there's what you're going to find from us. I've been working on some toppings that I'm going to be, that are wine related. So I'm going to kind of play with that.
And you brought some of that here today,
I did,
right?
I did.
We should eat that.
Sure.
Yeah.
I'd love for you to eat.
Okay.
Please try it.
So what do we have here? We've got a brownie.
You've got a brownie. This one is a gluten-free brownie,
okay.
which is absolutely delicious.
All right.
And I've made a Cabernet Ganache
Oof,
to
phenomenal.
Put on top.
Oof.
This may, it's a little surprising,
yeah?
like everything else that we do.
Okay.
It's a little surprising.
Well, let me be surprised. Hold on
yep.
a second. Oh, nice. All right. So this is a little slice of brownie with a Ganache topping. Oh, my God. That's awesome. Now, is there marijuana in this?
No, no, there's not. We left that out.
I thought you were crazy. You told me you were coming out. You were crazy. Wow, this is great.
So we play around with our flavors, and no matter what it is that we do, you know, it's all full flavor and really delicious. You know, you're going to come away satisfied when you have a treat from us.
Right. And then what's the other thing over here? This is like a ginger scone.
We have two different kinds of scones here. This is candied ginger and a cranberry orange.
Okay.
And we've made a homemade lemon lime curd.
Oh, man.
That to put on top.
Can I try that?
Absolutely. Please do. And this is very tart. It's very full flavor again.
Okay.
I'm not going to overwhelm you with...
That is very lemony. Let me chase it with some of this limeade.
I love your reactions because it's a pleasure to cook for people who enjoy your food.
Oh, yeah, of course. Now, let me ask you an important question about that. Was there marijuana in that one?
No.
Okay.
You will not come away high.
Maybe. Well, I'll tell you what. I love your stuff. It's very unique. The fact that it's all natural. The fact that it will go bad over time. Because, you know, how many times we buy, like, pastries or something, and they sit on the shelf forever.
Yes.
There's all these preservatives. I don't want to eat that.
No.
I don't want that stuff in my body.
Right.
Maybe in a past life.
Right.
But certainly not this one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's fantastic. It really is. I love
thank
your
you
stuff
very
so much.
Appreciate that.
Okay, so listen. Before I let you go, or before we, you know, branch off to other things, I have a very important question to ask you. Of everybody who comes on the show.
Okay, I'm ready.
You know you're going to die tomorrow. Mm-hmm. It's your last day on Earth tomorrow. You have one last bite to eat, and I want to know what that bite is. What is the last thing you want to have on this Earth?
I would probably choose one of our chocolate chip blondies. It's a chocolate chip cookie.
Well, you just do not stop promoting, do you?
No, I do not. Hey, give me a platform, and I'll take it. No,
Alrighty, I
love those. I love them. It's a chocolate chip cookie in a bar form, and it is awesome.
Oh, nice. That sounds great.
Delicious.
All right. Your chocolate chip blondie. You know, I asked Michelle this question, right?
What did she say?
She had the best response to this question that anyone has ever had, because I've asked this question of everybody.
Yeah.
And I think it was the first time I'd had her here for dinner. And I made a very simple meal. I knew it was going to be okay. When we first started dating, I thought she was a vegetarian because I didn't know much, right? She suggested this place we went on our first date to meet for breakfast and coffee. It turns out that it was kind of a vegetarian type of place.
Oh, okay.
And so I didn't know, so I just made a regular meal. It turns out she wasn't. She'd eat anything. So we're having this dinner, and she's really super easy to talk to. So I'm thinking, this is going well. We can talk about anything. So I asked her the question. I said, all right, we play this game all the time, and I'm just interested to see what kind of a foodie you are. So I asked her the question, final bite. And you know what her response was?
I'd love to hear.
Nothing.
Oh.
She goes, I'm going to die tomorrow. I'm devastated. Who's going to take care of my kids? I can't think about food.
Right.
I'm going to die. And I thought, no one has ever come out with that response. And I said, you can't come up with one bite of food? She goes, no, it's the last thing on my mind. She goes, why would you ask me that question? Who's going to take care of my children? That's what I'd be worried about the most, not what am I going to eat?
Yeah, she's a mom.
She's totally a mom. And I thought, wow. I said, well, you know, it's just a question. We all ask the question. Everyone has an answer. She says, what the hell's wrong with you people? I was dying laughing. And no one has ever come back. And I think that kind of set the precedent for the rest of our life.
I love desserts.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I would probably want a dessert. That's why.
Yeah. Well, at least you're consistent. Okay, so where can people find out more about you? What's your website address?
www.fineschonehengebakingco.com.
Got it.
It's a mouthful.
You know what? It's also a typeful. We'll go ahead and type it on the website. How's that? No problem at all. Are you on social media at all?
We are.
Okay.
We are.
On Facebook?
Facebook and Twitter.
And Twitter.
Right. Okay. Twitter's new to us.
All right.
So I'm just starting out. And having a little fun with it, but it's brand new for us. But the website is there, and so is Facebook.
We'll put links to everything.
That's great.
MyLifeIsAFoodie.com. You can check it out. All right. Hey, Debbie, thanks for coming on today.
Thank you. I so appreciate it.
No problem at all. Your stuff is delicious, and you know, if I'm going to endorse it at all, it's going to be good, and that was fantastic.
I appreciate it. Thanks.
And I can't wait for your line of pop brownies, because I know that's coming. We're in California.
You know what is actually really funny about you saying that is that I had a call not too long ago from somebody who was looking for a kitchen to bake their pot brownies in.
Yeah.
And they were very persuasive, and I kept thinking to myself.
Persuasive how? They offered you marijuana?
Well, they were just really, he was very pushy.
Okay.
But he didn't actually persuade me to lend him the kitchen or even to rent it out to him.
It's funny because pushers do tend to be pushy.
Yeah, that's right. But I thought that was sort of interesting. I asked him whether he was just going down the list of commercial kitchens in the area,
right,
or how he chose us, because it was really a random call.
Yeah. So it was a possibility.
He was really serious about it. I didn't take him very seriously.
Right. You know, I only ask because there has to be some form of comedy on the show. We end up baking. How funny is baking, right?
Well,
There's this great joke about comedy. This guy asked a question. Ask me, what is the most important thing about comedy?
What's the most timing? Important thing?
You get it? All right, Debbie, thanks again.
Hey, thank you. Right. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
We're going to make a banana cream pie, which for me is like the real celebration of a banana. Everyone really wants that really rich, true banana flavor, but no one really wants to know how you get it. But this is how you really get it. It looks kind of gross, but it tastes really good. This is bananas in their several stages of life. Bananas at this stage are really bitter and very starchy. This banana I would also not touch. They're a little less starchy and a little more sweet, but they're still of mostly no use to us. This is the kind of banana that I like to eat. I like a little bit of starch to it and a little firmness, and it's just a little sweet. It's not too sweet. If I want something sweet, I'm going to eat a cookie, not a banana. Bananas at this stage are going to play a role in our banana cream pie. They're sweet. They still have a firmness to them, but this is where you start to taste banana. And this is where bananas, in my opinion, really, really taste like bananas. If you stick a banana that's like this in your freezer, this is what it'll look like after 2 or 3 days, which is what we need to make our banana cream. We'll peel them. A smart man once told me that the easiest way to peel a banana is from the bottom. It's almost like they've been like braised and caramelized, but they're really just aging in their own skin. They go in a blender. Egg yolk, sugar, salt, cornstarch, milk, and a little bit of heavy cream. This is not how most people make banana cream. I blend them all together really quickly. They think I'm crazy until they do it. I'm telling you. So you just throw it in a pan on the stovetop. As it heats, that cornstarch that we put in is going to start thickening it. We'll let it continue to go. In the meantime, we're gonna bloom gelatin. We use sheet gelatin in our kitchen, but powdered gelatin also works at home. We just bloom it in cold water until it is soft. Our banana cream is nice and thick. It's come up to a boil and you can really tell the difference in the consistency of it. We're gonna pour it back into the blender. We're also going to add the gelatin that we just bloomed. It's nice and soft. And put some yellow food coloring in. A really good banana cream pie isn't yellow just because. It's yellow because somebody put food coloring in it. So do a few drops at a time. That was more than a few, but got a really yellow mess. Next step, fridge to cool. For me, the perfect balance to a banana cream pie is a crust that can really hold up to the sweetness of banana and banana cream, which means chocolate crust. The chocolate crumb is very easy to make. It's flour, some cornstarch, some sugar, and some salt. The secret to chocolate crumbs is the cocoa powder. We use a Valrhona cocoa powder. So just take the dry ingredients, toss them around a little bit, and we add a little bit of melted butter. Toss it around until we get some clusters, some chocolate clusters. These get spread out on a baking pan, just baking them in the oven until they dry out. And then we throw them into our food processor. We put just a little bit of room temperature or melted butter in there. You're just gonna grind your chocolate crust down to a sandy, pliable texture, and then we push it into a crust. Maybe that should be your test. When your banana's this color, it's ready to make pie. This is whipped cream and the banana, the yellow banana mixture mixed together. I'd say you pour a quarter of it into your pie crust. In my opinion, the best part of the banana cream pie is like the hidden bananas in the center. And for that, we're gonna use not the eating banana, but the just getting ripe banana. So I just make an incision, use the peel as like your cutting board, and then I like to cut them in half. Once I cut them widthwise, I like to cut them in half, just so you can get a little banana in every bite. That's kind of like, it's like the perfect bite theory. Then you're just gonna layer the rest of your banana cream on top. I drown them, force them back in. You are gonna wanna put this pie back in the fridge. It's also pretty good semi-frozen. If this were a fable, the moral of the story is, don't cry over rotten bananas. They're not rotten, actually.
Hey, and that's the show. Listen, music in this episode by The XX and Scheme. If you like the music, buy that shit. MyLifeAsAFoodie.com for direct links. Check out MyLifeAsAFoodie.com also for links to Debbie's website, her Twitter account, and also A Taste of Camarillo. Want to thank Debbie again for coming in and bringing in those delicious treats. Hopefully next time she'll put a little pot in this stuff, because you know that pot makes everything better. Until next time, my name is Phil, and this has been My Life as a Foodie. Ciao.